Welcome back to Prime Your Midlife. And today this episode's slightly different in that I am being interviewed by a lady called Vicky Midwood. So yeah, I'm still kind of hosting the show, but I'm passing the baton over to Vicky. And in this episode, we talk about my own personal journey through a midlife bump, maybe call it a midlife crisis, and some of the steps I use to get myself out of the other side. Enjoy the show and thank you for tuning in.
Hello and welcome to Raw Chatter. I am your host speaking, Vicky Midwood, health coach and addiction eliminator. And I am not solo today. I am joined by an exciting guest. Exciting because he is one of the few male guests that we have had on the podcast this season. His name is Chris Wilson, and he is a health enabler. Chris, our readers, listeners, watchers will be wondering, what is a health enabler? And I would love you to explain just what that is and how you got into that role. So over to you.
Well, hopefully, first of all, thank you for the opportunity, Vicky. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm standing behind lots of hormones on the basis that I might be the first or a few of only male guests. So I take that responsibility heavily. Health enablement. Well, I kind of wear two hats. One is a simple commercial one where I protect people with health through a health insurance journey. And then secondly, I have a bit of an infinite purpose around trying to work with men, particularly those in midlife, who are feeling as though they're stuck. I call it the messy middle. And my purpose is try to sit with them to get them through that, pull them through it, drag them through it, kick them through it, or just give them some inspiration to get out of it themselves.
Fabulous. So which health company are you a part of? Because there's so many out there. Let people know which company we're talking about, because nothing is hidden under the rug or behind closed doors on this podcast. So share what that is. And also, what age are we talking about when we're talking about midlife, just to give people clarity on that?
Okay, so the first company is it's WPA, so Western Province Association, and I'll leave that there for you to do your own due diligence as to whether or not that's a company you wish to engage in. Midlife, well, it's up to you. Ricky Gervais on his stand-up comedy routine called himself middle-aged, age 62, and he got trolled for it significantly. But statistically, it's around about 40 to 55, right? Can be earlier, can be later, but it's when male hormones levels begin to drop, testosterone particularly, and then it's sometimes where you are looking into the future, knowing that you've probably got less lives to live, and you've already consumed more years than you've got left.
Right. Yeah. And so I think for many women and men listening, they don't necessarily recognize that there is what we call the andropause that men go through. And it's not quite the same as the menopause, but it is hormonal based. And there are more similarities than perhaps women will understand. And for you, I'm guessing that a lot of the work that you do helps people to understand just what happens within that time frame. But you also have a story to share for what happened to you around that sort of age. Do you want to enlighten us on just what got you into now doing what you do with the passion that you have?
Yeah, so I mean, andropause is a very real thing, and it doesn't perhaps get as much spotlight focus as it should do. And it's kind of like that frog that goes into boiling water. If you chucked him in first of all, he'd know it was hot and he'd jump out pretty quick. But from a cold water perspective, that frog was in it. As it warms up, he doesn't notice. And that often is what happens to a man as he goes through his middle-aged andropause, in that the hormones deplete slowly, muscle atrophy declines, and things like metabolic rate declines. And before you know it, you know, you're looking down at your lycra and there's a big fat gut over the top of it. You can't quite get up as well as you should do. And some of the things that are supposed to get up don't quite get up as well as they could. So you suddenly think, I am no longer the man that I'm purported to be.
Yeah. And it's a shock to the system because, as you say, it's just not spoken about enough, in my opinion. And we kind of, I don't know if this is still true, but I think it is. It kind of ties in with that image that we have of a middle-aged man with a bit of a pot belly and a bit of a poor posture. And, you know, you kind of lost all your sparkle. But there's not the connection that actually that is what is going on. And it is hormonal based.
Well, and also I think society tends to say, oh, go and get a Porsche. Are you driving your Harley? And we almost sort of pour some cynicism or scorn over it in the fact that it's just something that happens. Get over it, mate. And that's part of society not really diving deep enough, empathetically enough about actually what happens. And, you know, my own journey was my own shame, guilt, pride, ego, any one of those words you could put on the block, but actually it was head in the sand stuff of not really living up to adversity and be willing to talk about it. And it got so bad for me. Sleep was deprived, which manifests itself into stress. And then you start reaching into bad foods, bad habits, not looking after yourself. And the treadmill of decline speeds up and up. And yeah, one day in December 2017, I had an ideation journey around leaving this planet as I know it. And so thankfully, you know, our conversation video played in my head as I was on that journey. And, you know, that video was a stark reminder that I've got a lot of opportunity to give stuff back to people that matter to me. And it stopped me in my tracks, thank goodness. Wow. And from there, it was all about self-care, self-respect, self-love. And I now can look back at those years and go, wow, that was such an opportunity to exit. However, now knowing what I've had from that time and what I can look forward to, I appreciate that it would have been the worst decision ever. But when you're in the midst of the maelstrom of stuff, you haven't got lucid thoughts because you're just wrapped up in your own self-conscious Maya.
And I love the way that you described it as with the analogy of the frog in the water, because it creeps upon you. And I'm guessing that you start to question so many things about yourself as a man, what are your capabilities, what is your purpose? You know, am I actually good at the stuff that I've been telling myself I'm good at? And to actually get to that point of almost despair that you can't see any other way out is quite a shock to your own system, I've no doubt. When you recognize that you managed to pull yourself out of that, what did you then decide to do? How did you help yourself to kind of change how you were feeling and thinking?
Well, I'd love to answer that in a minute if I could, but I just want to go back to something you talked about there of, I don't think you're really fully aware of the slippery slope that happens. It kind of creeps up on you. And then the self-conscious thought process almost tricks you to say, yeah, that could be a way forward. That could be a way to stop the noise. That could be a way to stop the pain. And it almost becomes a justification that this is a route that is logical.
Right.
And it's just so bizarre that as a species, we are the only species that seems to exist on the planet to say, well, why don't we just stop ourselves and check out? You know, giraffes don't do it, elephants do it, but we're supposed to be the top of our species in terms of evolution. And yet, I don't think we've grown up yet. We might still be living our tribal roots. We might still be believing that we're the tribal warrior and we have to be strong and we have to be the person that provides and gives and hunts and feeds and proliferates. But the modern man isn't that. But I still think they trap themselves in their own ideologies of what they should be.
And do you, I mean, this is a conversation that could potentially take us off into all kinds of trajectories, but do you think that a lot of that social conditioning is something that is getting worse in terms of what we think a male should be and his role as, say, maybe a partner or a provider? Or is that story, is that narrative slowly changing?
I think so, but equally, and I'm a complete advocate of leveling up, and I believe that there are opportunities that have to be given to both sexual genres and also society. However, when you look at the statistics, you know, 3 out of 4 suicides, end of life strategies, are male.
Yeah.
And in the midlife bracket in particular, according to the Office of National Statistics, 50 to 54 is the biggest impact of all of an end of life strategy for men. Mm-hmm. And whatever is going on, we've got a fundamental problem that it's one of the biggest reasons why we have men leaving us.
Yeah.
And I just think more work, more focus needs to be done on it. And yes, we've got some great campaigns out there, but something's still going wrong. And actually, from COVID, there's a wagging tail that's becoming even more alarming, which is end-of-life decisions in a younger generation. And what's going on there?
Yeah, and I think, again, it's about how we, as the species, the human species, haven't actually caught up with the times and the world that we're living in. And looking at what we don't know anymore, really, what is our role and our purpose, because it has shifted so much. And we've got technology that can do so many things for us that there's so much uncertainty as to what really is our place and our role. And I think for young people, it's more a kind of a more prominent question. And if they can't see what is potentially going to be available to them, it makes it very difficult to be able to make sense of the thoughts. And just picking up on something that you said, because one of the things that kind of seemed like a logical justification for maybe making the choice that thankfully you didn't make was quieting the noise in your head. And I think that is something that we need to start opening up about, is that women tend to chat openly about what they're feeling and what they're thinking with their girlfriends and over a coffee. And it's not an unusual thing to do for them to be quite open and honest about feelings. And I know, as you said, there are campaigns, but I still feel that men don't necessarily feel as comfortable sharing with another man just what is going on in their head. What are their thoughts and feelings? Is that what you felt at the time?
Well, I can't speak to say whether or not my individual journey is the same, but the statistics that if you dig into the Samaritans research, 78% of those that took the decision had a GP consultation 3 months before or in the last 3 months, and they still did what they did.
Right.
And therefore, perhaps some of what is looking at is how we deal with a man that puts his hands up and says, I've got a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, way, way back, our role models when we were young were mostly female. If you look at a primary school, you are hard pressed to find men in those places. And there are more men now being brought up in single households. And then even in therapy or the medical profession, the preponderance of therapists are more female than male. And again, I'm not putting any scorn on the professions, but are men being tackled by a male brain? And the other problem, Vicky, is that a lot of those men, particularly 50 to 54, are lonely and they're on their own, perhaps because they've been separated, divorced, or widowed. And as you absolutely rightly say, they've lost contact with some of their peer groups. They've lost contact with some of their close friends.
Yeah.
And therefore, they've just got their own lonely thoughts to dwell on. Mm-hmm. And when you just sit there in a ball and only have your own thoughts, it's a painful place to be.
Absolutely. But you have found a way, or you did find a way, of coming back from that and, you know, help people to understand what that process was like for you and what you actually do now to help other people to find what works for them.
Yeah, so I've got a number of different frameworks, but one of the lovely ones I like is a Japanese phrase called wabi-sabi, which is basically understanding. Have you heard of it before?
Yes, but our reader, our listeners and our watchers might not have, so explain it to them. I mean, they can go Google it, but it's easier to hear it from somebody.
Well, it's the principle of embracing imperfection, really, in that there are jagged edges, or, you know, a bowl might be not quite circular, but you've made it and therefore you should embrace it. And I think society projects perfectionism so much now through the ideals of social media or some of the role models that we are looking at on Instagram, or even who are deemed to be successful males or females in society. And it's really difficult to face into that when it's in front of you every day on our screens. And I would just love people to be more mindful of themselves, and that you are unique in yourself. There's only one of you in 8 billion people that live on the planet, and be satisfied with the fact that so far you've got 100% strike rate. You know, you're still here and you've faced through all of those journeys from your past. And maybe we should be a bit more self-congratulatory of the journeys that we've been on. So that's the sort of big picture view. But yeah, if we come closer to the painting, I'd say that I've got five pillars, which is, I call them the men's R: mindfulness, energy or exercise, nutrition, relationships, and sleep. And those five in individualism won't work. But if you start to connect them together, so be more mindful, have better energy, eat better through nutrition, drink less of the bad stuff, have good relationships with people, and have good sleep, then that's a really good way of setting yourself up for success. And there's lots more individual components of those five pillars, but those are my main five pillars that I work on every single day.
And that, I think it's lovely to have a framework and an acronym that people can kind of connect to and write that down and go, okay, what am I going to do today to be more mindful? How can I make sure that I eat to nourish my body and have the energy that I want to have to be able to do the things that I want to do and help me to connect with people that I enjoy being with? And it so much of that is very simple stuff, isn't it? It's not like you going out and suddenly changing your whole world and your lifestyle. It's very doable on a daily basis. Do you want to give some examples of what you actually do?
Well, first of all, my morning routine, I call it prime. So just going back, the men's R, I also have the R as sort of like a squared, you know, if it was a squared equation.
Yeah.
Because you can have all the four things, but if you haven't got good relationships, good connectivity to people that cheer you on or support you, then actually all the other four things aren't great, because you need to have good conversations, good peer groups. And later in life in particular, it's very well documented that when you've got good relationships, it gives you a longer life. And if you, you know, read the book, Bronnie Ware's Regret to the Dying, and also the Harvard study, it's the relationships that keep people alive and active longer. So that's why I have the men's sort of R, if you talk about the small R underpinning everything. But my prime routine is my morning routine, and I call that prime because it's prioritization. What's important to me today? And I think about that. I read every morning a few pages of a book, and that enables me to just grow my mindset. I have the R for inspiration. I have some quotes or some mantras that I'll read just to get my thoughts thinking for the day. I have mindfulness. I will spend about 10 minutes doing some mindfulness, whether that be with music, with guided meditation, or perhaps sticking on a Tony Robbins prime track. And then I have energy. So I'll always have 10 minutes in the morning to do core work or some calisthenics or some resistance work, just to start firing oxygen and blood through the lymph nodes to really fire myself up for success. So I call that my morning prime.
Yeah. And how long does that take? Because I know on social media now, you read all kinds of morning routines that when you read them, you kind of go, my God, that's going to take you about 4 hours. So, but it doesn't need to, does it? How long does this stuff take?
It can be a little atomic prime. So it could be something, if I'm out and about and I'm in a hotel, I'll still do it. I might do some press ups. I might do a quick minute mindfulness. It's what works for you. And that's what I'm a great advocate of, is just try, test and measure, and find something works for you. And if you don't want to do my prime, that's fine. If you don't want to do Hal Elrod's morning equation, that's fine. If you don't want to be the 5 a.m. club, that's fine. But just be curious and find something for you, rather than picking up your phone and being triggered by everybody else's comparison. If the first thing you did this morning is reach for the phone to turn it off and then pick it up and then spend half an hour with it, you do that half an hour every day, and you do that for the whole year. That's literally 4 weeks of active time that you've lost, what could you do with 4 weeks?
Yeah, wow. And I love that, because when you quantify it in time, it doesn't seem that much, and it's maybe not too bad when you look at it on a daily basis. But as you say, when you add it up, that's a heck of a lot of time doing what? Well, probably making yourself not feel great about yourself, which is exactly what we don't want to be encouraging, particularly young people, to be doing. And one of the things that I say to my clients is, if you are tempted, even if you use your phone as your alarm, just ideally put it at the other end of the room, so you've got to get out of bed to turn it off and leave it where it is, or better still, put it in another room completely and get an old-fashioned alarm clock to wake you up, because it is too tempting to pick it up. And once you're on it, it does what it's meant to do. It's meant to keep you addicted, and it's been designed to do that. You also, though, help people to really kind of open up and talk about what they do. And you've got a YouTube channel, and you've got a program as well, haven't you? Do you want to kind of enlighten people a little bit more as to what the program entails and just what is on offer? Because you've got a plethora of resources available to help men, but not just men, I guess partners of men who may be struggling as well.
Yeah, a lot of the ideas are ubiquitous in that if you did them, you would be a better human, hopefully, but they are designed to be more associated with a man in midlife. And you can go on my YouTube. I hopefully you put those details in the show notes, because I can't explain them all now. There's a podcast as well. And those channels focus on those five fundamentals of mindfulness, exercise, nutrition, relationship, and sleep. And then the program, really, it starts off with, if you just want to jump in lightly, we have what's called an AIM session, which is the fourth Wednesday of the month, 7 o'clock, all for free. And we have an AIM session, which is accountability, inspiration, and mindset. The accountability is we come back and share what we've been working on for the last month. Inspiration is me going down the camera and talking about something. So February, we're talking about resilience. How do we survive through resilience, and some tactics around that? And then the final one is sort of mastermind mindset, where all the people in the room help each other with what could be a common problem, one problem, two problems. And we all try to collectively combine together to talk about how we might have got ourselves stuck, or how we can support that particular individual. So that's the first part of the program that is there for free. And again, happy to share those details.
Yeah.
And then program is one-on-one. So we can do one-on-one coaching to talk about where they are and how we can get them forward. And then that combines into a group coaching experience as well. And there's a few other bits and pieces of that. But effectively, I'm just trying to work with somebody quickly and get them out the other end and allow them to be free and able to perform by themselves. I don't want to be working with somebody for a year to 2 years to 3 years, because effectively that means that I haven't done my job, which is to enable them to fish for themselves. I don't want to feed them fish every day. I want to enable them to fish for themselves.
Yeah. And I love the fact that it's a free opportunity, the first step, and a really good way then of connecting to other people and recognizing that you are not alone going through what you're going through and feeling what you're feeling. And you're in a safe space with people who are open to talking about this stuff. And I think that's the beauty of having stuff that's online. We can actually connect ourselves with other people that we just wouldn't get the opportunity to do, and we can have conversations that we'd never dream of having anywhere else. And I think that's the power of it. And because you have been through the learning and all of the stuff that you have, you're in a great place to share some tactics that you can say, well, try this, but if that doesn't work, you could also try this. And I think that's the beauty of it, isn't it? And
some of the stuff tactics is it's not just about sometimes telling people what they can do. It's sometimes just sitting in the same place as they are. And, you know, the trick is to stop digging in that hole and just to sit and recognize. But it's just sometimes about listening and also being curious. I mean, I had a call with somebody this morning, and I knew just from some of the stuff he'd shared this week that he wasn't quite right. And the first question I said is, hey, how are you? And he said, 100%. And I said, how 100% is 100%? And he said, well, actually, I'm kind of 70 to 80. But he felt as though he didn't want to burden himself with his baggage. And therefore, he just gave out what he considered to be the correct answer for the moment, but actually it wasn't the authentic answer. And the problem with that is the self-conscious mind knows the truth.
Correct.
Yes. And if you say 100% and actually you're feeling 70, you're now lying to yourself as well as the other people that you're talking about. And then when you're a fraud to yourself in the mirror, you look at yourself and go, Chris, you can't even be truthful yourself.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, one of the tactics I talk about is let's just sit, let's just talk. And when you're ready, tell me about the first step, the inch, the centimeter, the millimeter that you could do today to make yourself just feel a little bit better. Okay, how did that feel? Do you want to go back in the hole again? Or should we talk about the 2 millimeter, the 2 centimeter? And I'm right behind you. I'm here to catch you. I'm here to support you. But let's just see what we can do. And remember that there's so many other people out there that are in the same place as you. And there's other people that have succeeded to be better. But tomorrow's a new start, a new day, a new script, and you've got a clean piece of paper. And you can't saddle yourself with all of the failures of your past, but you can learn from them.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, you know, we get another 86,400 seconds. It's up to us. How are you going to use them?
And I love that. We get to, you know, we learn from stuff and we get to find out what is today about. And you also mentioned my favorite word there is just get curious. You know, get curious because curiosity helps us to be excited and helps us to give ourselves permission to try. And if we don't like it, it's okay. And if we do, we can keep on doing it. And there's no pressure. And that's the beauty of people connecting with you and with like-minded people, where your focus is on health in all areas, mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And you very much, we're very similar in what we do, in that we're helping people to actually reconnect to themselves and own their good points, their bad points, but not compare them with anybody else. Just recognize, as you said right at the start, you're a unique human, you're a unique individual, and that's pretty amazing. And we need to
say that. But I also want to recognize it's not easy, and sometimes the solutions that people are tempted by are the quick fixes, the shiny toys, the supplementations, the medication. And my principle is nothing good comes easy, but on the other side of hard is good, you know, hard choices, easy life, easy choices, hard life. And I hard choice a lot around my foods, my exercise. Some people say that sounds like a tough battle. Well, yeah, it's not easy, but tell me in 40 years how you're feeling and I'll tell you whether or not the hard struggle was worth it.
Right. And I love that because we somehow think that hard is a bad thing. Things shouldn't be hard. And yet we know as humans that if you, for example, get an A star in a physics exam and you compare that to getting an A star in, say, an English exam, you're going to probably recognize that you did blooming well because you got that A star in physics, whereas the English, probably because there wasn't as much effort involved. Physics is tough. There's a lot of effort involved in learning. And we do as humans value things that take more effort, just how we are made. And recognizing that, because a lot of people don't. If it's too easy, and this is, I think, a lot of the reason, and maybe you agree, a lot of the reason people don't do the basic stuff that you've said, like setting up your day in a positive way, they don't do it because it sounds, well, is that all I have to do? Is it that easy? And because it's too easy, they end up actually not doing it. But when you say, yeah, put some effort into it and sit with those uncomfortable feelings and, you know, maybe sit in silence if you always have noise going on. But those are the things that, as you say, it's baby steps.
But also, you know, just the fact that you talk about A star, from the moment that we're born, there's this pressure. Mm-hmm. When's he going to walk? And then when's he going to get into the football team? Is he going to become the star striker? Is he going to be player of the week? What grades has he got? What job's he going to get?
Yeah.
Then from then, when are they going to proliferate and have children? And how much car have they got? What's the house? Is the lawn manicured? What does the flowers look like? And there's just this judgment all the time that we have to try to live up to. And it's tough. But that's the societal pressure that we seem to get ourselves wrapped up in. And if my kids go to school and if he's really tried his best, and I say, did you try your best? And he comes out with a C, well, it's a C. But that's it. If as long as he tried his best and he's authentic with that answer, but if he says, I tried my best, and say, well, how much did you revise? Well, about an hour beforehand. Well, I'm sorry, lad, but that's not your best. But if his best is that he really poured his heart into it, he put every hour as possible into his physics, and it came out with a C, well, congratulations. That's a great job. How do you feel about that? I'm happy as Larry, Dad.
Right.
Fantastic. Don't let my judgments portray how he feels, because that's his feeling. And I want to wrap around that feeling as opposed to make him prejudge as to what I think.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important point there. You asking him, what does he feel, rather than your reaction determining how he's going to feel. And depending on your age, you know, I'm in that age bracket, I'm 55, and a lot of my friends are same sort of age with partners, and recognizing that this is a time that a lot of partnerships go through a divorce. And it's often because both sides are having their own journeys in terms of what is going on for them physically and emotionally and mentally. And there's just not necessarily the communication that we would hope, because we're not taught to understand. As men, you're not taught to understand particularly about menopause. Women aren't taught to understand about andropause. And yet we think, well, we've been living with somebody long enough, they should know. They should know what I'm feeling. They should know what I'm thinking, and all of this kind of stuff. But what you're offering is an opening for men to be able to recognize that it's okay to feel how you're feeling, and it's not fun, but you don't have to stay feeling that way. Tell people the name of your podcast if they want to jump on and have a little listen to that. Obviously, I will put the link in, but just what is it called so that they can carry on and listening to what you have to share on there?
It's called Prime Your Midlife. So Prime is still, you know, my morning five fundamentals. And it's also the adage of, if we prime ourselves for success, then we've got a better chance to be better. So it's Prime Your Midlife, and I'm sure you can find it on your favorite player.
Yeah, fantastic. So Prime Your Midlife, folks. Go and have a look at it. Subscribe to it so you don't miss an episode. And I'm going to ask you, Chris, if you had one thing to leave our listeners and our watchers with, what would it be? What would you want to kind of say to them to leave them with a positive message?
Find the joy. It's one of my five values. I've got five values, and joy is always in there. Find the joy. And if you can't find the joy, what could you do tomorrow to seek out some joy, whether that be with a person, a friend, a laugh, a joke? But joy just lifts me up and gives me a reason for living every day. And I love to laugh. I love to be frivolous. I love to have a little bit of fun and joy for me. This afternoon, I'm going to go for a run. It's belting down with rain, but I know somewhere in the forest, I'll have, you know, water dripping off into my nose. That's joy to me, because I'm alive. I'm in nature. I'm doing something that's not particularly comfortable and nice, but actually I'll come home and I'll feel better for doing it. And that gives me joy. So yeah, find some joy.
I love it. And on that final note, positive note, folks, I just want to say thank you for listening. If you have found this episode helpful, or you think that somebody else may find it helpful, please do send them the link. If you have liked it, give us a like, give us a thumbs up. And of course, do subscribe, because the more of you that do subscribe, the more we can get more interesting and better guests on week by week. I'm going to leave you with my usual, folks. We only have one life, as far as we know, and one body. Look after it, because it is looking after you. Until next time, take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
And there it is, my own discussion with Vicky Midwood on some of my own personal experiences about dealing with midlife challenges. If you've enjoyed this, please share the show and take away something and apply that to your own mindset. We only have one life, so love life, live in life. Come back again soon. And for now, thank you so much for participating. Sign up and please like, share, and follow.